The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where lackadaisical overtime games against bad opponents and a sluggish half-court offense aside, make no mistake about it, the Lakers and Lego West are still taking those freaking hobbits to motherfucking Isengard. So welcome back to the Longbowed Shooter, Wes Matthews, a.k.a. Lego Wes, coined by Tommy over here, who was instrumental in last night's Lakers win against the Oklahoma City Thunder down the stretch, especially after having sat out the last few games. The Lakers have won five straight games now, even though it may not feel like it, and they sit atop the Western Conference at number two. I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. We may get Alan Riley popping in at some point. We have literally a reverse situation from last episode where I was saying, we've got Alan and Tommy may pop in at some point. He never did. So I don't know. Maybe Alan will buck the trend and we'll actually have all three of us here on this podcast for the first time this season, which is crazy. But anyways, Tommy, welcome back to the show. Your thoughts on the weekend?
You mean like Lakers-wise or like the Super Bowl?
Yeah, the weekend performance.
Oh, the weekend performance. Yeah, it was, I thought it was fine. I don't know. Was it controversial?
No, I mean, there was no real setup or thought behind this. Forget about the weekend. Let's talk about the Lakers. We are 19-6. Before we dive into like the nitty gritty of things, just what is your one word sentiment to describe, if you can come up with one word to describe how you're feeling about this team in the last few weeks, what would it be? I know I'm putting you on the spot there, but yeah.
I would probably say apathetic. It's hard for me to get to, and I mean that like the way I feel about the team, and I feel like how the team approaches a lot of their games. You know what I mean? Like we'll talk about this a little bit more, but it does feel like they are really viewing this. I mean, we're 25 games into the season, so we're about a third of the way through in this shortened season, a little more than a third, I guess. So I don't know if there's ever going to be a point where they turn it on. I mean, there certainly still is time to start to keep building it up until you decide to turn it on. But it feels like they're not taking it super, super seriously. And that translates to the effort on the court, right? It's like we want to see high intensity basketball because that's when the best basketball comes out. And I just worry that, you know, I don't know how much longer it's going to be like this, but you know, it sort of feels like a lot of nights, like we're not necessarily getting that. Like we're still winning the games. You mentioned we're second place. Mm-hmm. We're 19-6. I mean, it's so hard to complain about being 19-6, but it just like so many of our wins, particularly against some of the lesser teams, have just felt like we kind of coasted and, you know, tried for the last 5 minutes and then won, which is fine. And look, that's what good teams can do. That's what championships teams can do. But as a fan, it kind of makes it a little tough to watch at times.
Yeah, you're kind of lulled into that boredom the same way the Lakers approach it on the court. I felt the same way. Not until like Kuzma, Caruso, and THT come in, am I like, okay, here's some energy. Let's go. What are you guys going to do? Going through the motions is probably the phrase to use right now for the Lakers. Before we delve deeper into the Lakers, though, I used Wes Matthews as my intro there. So what were your thoughts on Lego Wes's return there? I kind of questioned Frank's decision to leave him in the closing lineup because I don't think he's done that a lot this season at all. But, I mean, the dude came through in a huge way. He hit like 4 threes, played pretty good defense. And I think Wes Matthews, I think, credited Frank Vogel this entire time for communicating very transparently with him what the plan was. And clearly the plan was to put him and Markieff Morris on ice for a little bit because THT was DNP for 2 or 3 games as well. And I think he appreciated that communication. And I think that bodes well for the team as a whole, given how much we've talked about what a tough juggling act Frank Vogel has with this talented group this year. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Wes Matthews' return?
I thought it was like the quintessential veteran performance, you know, like this is exactly the type of veteran you need on a championship caliber team. There are going to be times where, I mean, like, let's be real. Wes is not a top 3, 4, 5, 6 player on this team. Like there is a very talented team and he is not going to, just by virtue of being a vet, be guaranteed minutes. And, you know, that's what happened. Talen Horton-Tucker has been amazing. And frankly, since he's improved, his defense has been just like, so it's been, you know, you feel bad not playing him because he's earned the minutes and like he needs to develop. And he brings such an interesting dynamic that you kind of want to bring out a bit more because it's a potentially a guy who could help you, you know, down, certainly down the road in the coming years, but even this season. So you need to develop that. But at the same time, you're going to lean on some of your veterans to win, pull out, you know, close playoff games for you, as we saw last year. And Wes, you know, was not playing horrible. Like I, frankly, and I hate to say this because Markieff was such an important part of our run last year. Markieff was not playing well on either end, really, before he got benched. His 3-point shooting was, I mean, over a pretty big sample size, had taken a very large dip. His defense, at times he seemed a little bit slow, which was interesting because we were playing him at much more at like a stretch five role. And you would think he would be like speed wouldn't be an issue for him at that position. But, you know, I was overall fairly unimpressed with Markieff this season, but Wes was actually playing pretty well. You know, I currently, and obviously this factors in last night, but you know, he's shooting about his career averages from the field. He's shooting slightly above his career averages, hitting 40% from three this year. Overall, playing very, very well. You know, he doesn't get the line very much, but 80% from the line, like playing solid defense when he was playing earlier. There was not really a reason he shouldn't have been playing other than Caruso and THT have been so good. But to see a guy like that, you know, NBA veteran, been in the league 12 years, like 34 years old, like on some very good teams in his career, go to like be pushed to the end of the bench, get cut out of the rotation for 6 games, come back in and just, you know, score 16 points, nail a bunch of big threes, play outstanding defense down the stretch. And yeah, I mean, to your point, it was surprising that Vogel played him in some ways, but maybe unsurprising in others. You know, Vogel likes to do this thing where he, when one guy's out, he'll just like slot a different guy into that exact role in rotation just so he doesn't throw off the other rotations. And he kind of, you know, with the decision to start Markieff instead of Kuz, you know, you can kind of see him heading that direction with the decision to let Wes close games where Caruso might otherwise be closing. You kind of saw that as well. But I think it's it was a very, very good performance by Wes, a very good sign. And the interview, you know, the quote that you mentioned is super telling. And it's going to be so important for Vogel to continue to do this throughout the season because we might not play Markieff for long stretches, but when we need a stretch four or stretch big five, you know, in the playoffs, we might go to him and he needs to be ready. Right. Yeah. And same thing with Wes. He might go stretches of games where he doesn't play, but if we play a game that has like a team that has a bunch of wings and we need extra wing defenders on the floor, like we might throw them out there. So I think if that was that, you know, beyond Wes's performance, hearing that from that quote from him about how Vogel's approaching things was definitely great to hear as well.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't realize he was out for six games. That's crazy. But I think, like, to your point, what we saw these last few games with Wes being totally out and then finally back in a big way, it's sort of like a microcosm for what we can expect in the playoffs and sort of what we saw last year with JaVale and Dwight, right, where they were pretty much phased out for entire series. And then come right. Denver series, Dwight, we need you to step up and, you know, body up Jokic for a little bit. And he did a great and solid job. And then in the finals, he was out again, you know. But it almost gives Frank Vogel license to be able to and luxury to continue to develop THT throughout the regular season without having to worry, am I totally burying Wes Math and Markieff to the point where if I need them at a certain point – it'll take some adjustment and some time for them to catch their bearings. And not that, you know, this is always going to happen where Wes Matthews sits out for six games and all of a sudden he puts up four threes the first game you insert him in. But it's just nice to know that, yes, I mean, these are veterans. They have communicated with each other behind the scenes and they know what's expected of them. And I think that is important to carry through till the end of the season, especially with how weird and wonky this season is. And especially with, again, what a tough juggling act Frank Vogel has to sort of balance here. And what we can get into it later too, just talking about how at the start of the season, we're like, oh yeah, we're 11 deep. And then you're starting to see when it comes to continuity and cohesion, how that can be a problem when everybody's healthier, everybody's active. And you're just like, yeah, maybe it's not a good idea to go a full season literally playing 11 guys every single game. And I think right. Frank's sort of coming across that problem. And I don't envy his situation right now, having to also behind the scenes, you know, be diplomatic with all of his players who I'm sure he loves and enjoys working with, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, with that said, just to give people an outline of the rest of this episode, I will just give the lay of the land of this team. And Tommy, I'll pitch it to you in terms of any concerns you have or any topics you want to touch upon since you haven't been on. We'll take it to break and then we'll talk about Schroeder sort of finding his groove and his relation to THT also finding his groove, because one, Schroeder is eligible for an extension, I think, in the next week that can net him up to his max, I think, if they agree to do that, him and the Lakers. And then obviously there have been talks with there have been talks around the league of teams potentially poison pilling THT, giving him the Gilbert Arenas rule contract this summer, and what the Lakers will do in that event. I mean, to be clear, the Lakers can pay guys however much they want to pay them. The real problem is how much luxury tax will they want to pay, but we'll get into that later. With that said, the Lakers, as you mentioned, 19-6, were pretty much a third of the way through the season, and there have been a number of things going on with this team. One, LeBron James continues his torrid MVP pace as the team continues to try and find its, I don't know, identity amidst all of the weirdness and the shuffling rotations and just trying to maintain health and whatnot. Second, Anthony Davis is very clearly not 100% physically, and he's a bit nicked and bruised. He sat out the last game, and a lot of people have been questioning his effort. And he's already admitted, like, yo, the offseason threw me off, that championship run, and then the quick turnaround threw me off more than anybody. And also just the fact that he is a freakish human being with unnatural limbs and arms or whatever, you know, it makes sense that you may want to proceed with caution and kind of treat him more carefully than you would any other player. And then we've got THT gaining so much steam that it's undeniable and almost looks silly if you don't play him, because he's not even giving you the common rookie mistakes to give you license to pull him anymore, right? Right. We've got Kuzma turning into one of our most reliable defenders, which is nuts. And then Schroeder being on an offensive tear and finding his groove these last few games and being super efficient doing it as well. That all leads to the Lakers still being number one in defensive rating. They are number three in total net rating. Their offense has slipped, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. Their half-court offense has looked very uneven and mucked up, to say the least, especially that starting unit. But we're still number eight in offensive rating. So yeah, for me, I mean, it still feels like we are a bipolar mishmash of talented guys, disconnected parts sort of, but still getting the job done and winning, but not in a pretty way. And there have been a couple of times for me where I've just wondered why Frank doesn't go for the more optimal and intuitive lineup or stagger the personnel so it makes more sense with their individual skill sets. And again, I understand he's had a tough juggling act to uphold here all season. He's managing so many personalities and expectations, and we're just glad that he's maintained communication. So Tommy, with all this, all these things going on and Vogel still figuring things out, and maybe he's been semi-overwhelmed at, you know, all this too, how much of all this and the Lakers' unevenness is just the natural case of this is what this first third of the season is pretty much our bubble season, what we saw from the bubble last year. And now as we round into the second third, maybe we'll start to see the tightening of things and rotations and whatnot. How much of it is just default that's the case? How much of it is Frank Vogel's holding his cards close to his vest and, well, duh, you know, Gasol works well with Caruso, Kuzma, and THT. That's a devastating grouping, but Frank just doesn't want to unleash that enough. And, yeah, I guess where do you pinpoint the unevenness of this team thus far? Do you feel like it's been an uneven season? You mentioned it being apathetic for the team, but I guess where do you – I'd imagine you don't think this is an unsolvable thing, but at what point are you like, all right, let's get this engine chugging along and with more cohesion? Because right now, I mean, it's just a lot of disconnected parts. Anthony Davis is doing his own thing, trying to get healthy. LeBron's on his MVP thing to stem the tide. Schroeder's trying to get comfortable. THT is doing his own thing, trying to become like our next superstar. And there's a lot of things going on. A lot of good things, but a lot of uneven things. What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, this season is going to be weird for a while. And when it turns, I think we're going to forget about all of this really quickly. I would say I think our team identity this year that I'm really happy we ended up finding has been defense. And I assume, you know, because it's like that's the big thing that everybody said, oh, they're losing Danny. Oh, they're losing JaVale. I don't know why JaVale gets brought into this, but they're losing JaVale. They're losing Dwight. Honestly, a big one, right? Like, so that means they're going to be a bad or more an inferior defensive team compared to what they were last year. And so defense was their identity last year. They won the championship last year because of their defense, and that they're not a defensive team anymore. Thus, they're not going to be good. And I think we talked about this so much before the season started, but on paper, you could very clearly see a scenario where, you know, given Frank's scheming and his mindset as a defensive coach, we could actually be better defensively. And I think that's been the case. I mean, last year we were hovering, you know, top three defense all season, but we are like far and away been number one this year. And when we decide to like lock teams up, like they just can't score against us. You know what I mean? Like they can't do anything. Oklahoma City, sure, they almost beat us. We have to make a late game run to take it to overtime and win, but they shot 39% against us. You know what I mean? And that's becoming a recurring theme where we're seeing like us holding opponents to under 40% in, you know, well, sure, we're losing on effort plays, like giving up 15 offensive rebounds, like having a bunch of sloppy turnovers, but we are playing very, very well defensively. The only issue I have with this team, well, I guess I have two. One on the defensive end, I would say I would really, and we have a 15 slot that we are, as of now, actually eligible to use. I think it was like, we calculated at some point, it was like the end of January, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But certainly by the time the trade deadline comes and people are getting waived, we have a minimum slot to use for a 15th guy. I would really, really like to see us get some sort of rim protector because, you know, function of this is, you know, AD, like you said, is just not, it doesn't seem as into it this year as he was last year consistently. But we are giving up, I think we're 23rd in, at least before last night, we were 23rd in the league at points allowed at the rim. And that's just like not going to get it done. It's pretty crazy considering that's the case and we're still number one defensively. Yeah. So just we're doing something right. But like that needs to be addressed because in the playoffs, teams are going to attack your weaknesses. And when you have a big glaring weakness like that, it's going to really stand out on the scouting report. So I would like to see that get cleaned up. Second thing I would like to, another weird thing about that though, is we're also leading the NBA in blocks, which people said we wouldn't do, you know, after losing JaVale and Dwight. But, you know, again, but anyway, so half court, maybe we're eighth offensive rating overall. I believe half court, we're a bit worse than that. I think we're slightly below league average as a half court offensive team. Maybe we rose slightly last night, but I think, and look, Vogel has shown time and time again that he knows his guys. He knows what the right timing for everything is, and he knows when it's time to turn things on. Last year, it was very clear what our offensive identity was. Like, we were so deficient in terms of guys who could create offense that we had to run. And it would be like ball, like make or miss, like ball comes out of the net or off the rim. We are sprinting down to the other side. We led the NBA in fast break points. Sure, like we would pick and choose our moments, but the overall mindset was run. When you have an opportunity, run. When you think the defense is like taking a breath, run. And we had a really good feel for how to do that. And that helped us generate transition points, making us, you know, I think we were number one in transition efficiency last year and number one in fast break points. We are not seeing that this year. You know, this is a team that is so offensively talented in terms of individual players that I get the sense that Vogel is kind of holding back on exactly what he wants to do offensively. I mean, maybe I'm being foolishly optimistic about this, but this is a team that came in and scored 140 points or whatever, like the second game of the season, you know, or third game of the season, you know, so we can score. First 5 to 7 games of the season, I think we were number one or top three in offensive rating, and we've just steadily fallen down. But that's coincided with really ramping up the defense over that time. So I think we saw this at times last year. I think Vogel knows. I'm not saying it's a flipping a switch on or off or anything like that. I just think he probably knows that like eventually we'll get these guys offensively to where they need to be. But that mindset of defense needs to start from the beginning of the season, because it needs to be second nature that you're going to give 110% on defense to win a championship. And he probably figures that everybody likes to play offense, so it won't be hard to like get there eventually. Right. But you know, we're doing some things right. We're hitting threes, but I would like to see us, you know, to the point you made just a little bit ago, get a little bit more of an identity of what we are going to try to do offensively. Like last year, sprinting and in the half court, we'd throw it into the, run everything through the post. What are we going to do this year? I'd like to see a little more of that.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing, and maybe this is just how Vogel likes to play things, we see sprinklings here and there. And honestly, that's my only explanation for it, because there are some intuitive things that, like, you could pick anybody off the street and say, what would you do here? And that guy would say, oh, I would give the ball to Marc Gasol and have everybody cutting. And yet you have these, like, long stretches of games where, one, Marc Gasol is not even staggered with the right people. And then, two, Marc Gasol's out there, and for whatever reason, he hasn't touched the ball in 5 possessions, and he's rendered useless. He spaces the floor for you, but otherwise, the ball sticks to AD, LeBron James, or Dennis Schroeder, and he's, you know, yeah, he's not doing anything. So my only explanation for that, and we've seen these random games where it's garbage time, and Frank Vogel will insert Marc Gasol with garbage guys, not necessarily garbage guys, but, you know, THT and Kuzma are still out there, and you're like, well, this is random for Mark to be in there. But to me, that just kind of indicates, like, okay, he just doesn't want to show the full spectrum of what Marc Gasol and what this team can do, but he's showing slivers or, you know, breadcrumbs of what we can do, essentially, but not showing the full picture yet, which is I think that has been the case, especially with all of a sudden Marc Gasol and Schroeder being staggered more with the bench lineup and him working around, you know, we've got that, you know, energy unit with Kuzma, THT, Caruso, Trez, and LeBron. But we've also seen those three guys, namely Caruso, Kuzma, and THT with Marc Gasol as well, Marc Gasol and Schroeder. So again, I think it's Vogel continuing to see what pieces work together. He is Rubik's Cubing all of these things. And I think at the end of the day, he knows that at any two and a half minute stretch, Marc Gasol can get 3 assists. And I think we saw that last night. He had a nice give and go to LeBron James for like an alley-oop dunk. He had a nice give and go to Dennis Schroeder for an easy lay-in. So when I see plays like that, I'm like, why don't we just do that all the freaking time? And I get it. You don't want teams to scheme against all the different ways that Marc Gasol can cut up your defense. And right now, LeBron James has his MVP thing going on, and Frank's just giving him license to do that to stem the tide while we get things figured out. So I totally buy that. All right, with that said, before we take it to break, just wanted to remind everyone to please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Because the more you rate and review us 5 stars, that's how many more reverse carpal tunnel layups THT will do, where he has the perfect AP English off of his fingers to get it in against outstretched arms. I mean, at this point, what percentage do you think that dude is shooting on reverse layups? Because I'm pretty sure it's like 95%, because I have not seen THT get blocked on that
shot. When he goes to the reverse, you know it's going in.
It's so sick,
he's
dude.
He's better at that. Dude, his wingspan, like when he just unfurls his, you can tell that, I mean, certainly people aren't scouting him yet, which is, I think, playing to his advantage, but you can tell they're just like surprised when he's on the floor, because like, on both ends, on offense, his arms just extendo reach to the rim for layups that he shouldn't make. They should be blocked. And then on defense, he contests shots on the perimeter that he should not be able to contest. But anyway,
We'll get to THT after the break. But yes, if you want more of those reverse scoops with his wrist going a full 360 just to bank it into the basket, please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Also, if you'd like to help us out in any small way financially, please go to patreon.com/TheLakersLegacyPodcast and donate $1 today. All right, with that said, we'll take it to break. Before we get to the sponsors, our Apple Podcast review of the night. Tonight's Apple Podcast review of the night will be brought to you once again by our impressionist extraordinaire, Tommy Alexander, who will be reading it as Kyle Kuzma's Pashmina scarf that he wears in those ridiculous photo shoots. So this one's a tricky one. But with that said, Kyle Kuzma's Pashmina, take it away.
This review is entitled Laker Talk for your ride to... It's cut off, so I'm sorry.
Ride to where?
The review is by David Vu 999. Nice and quick, not too technical or stat heavy. Your real fan commentary on the game and the best team in the NBA.
There you go. Nice and quick and not too technical or stat heavy is exactly how we like it as well. Isn't that right? Hey.
Hey.
So that was a great reading as Kyle Kuzma's Pashmina scarf. What went into that channeling of yours? It's a tricky scarf to put on, but Kyle Kuzma does it well. What went into your channeling of Kyle Kuzma's Pashmina?
I just tried to think about what it would feel like to be the littest fashion item of the year, and I just went with that.
I like it. I like the peacock pattern on that scarf that Kyle Kuzma wears in that one particular photo shoot, because peacocks, Arcadia, it's our thing. All right, thank you, Kyle Kuzma's Pashmina. All right, so we're back. Before we get into talking about Schroeder and THT, I just wanted to highlight once again the evolution that we've seen from Kyle Kuzma. He had another double-double last night. Somehow he went 1 of 9 from three. I think 8 of those were wide open.
Yeah, that was crazy.
He just had a bad night. I mean, LeBron was 2 for 10, and I think Schroeder was 1 for 6. So the guys just didn't have their legs. Regardless, outside of that, I think Kuzma, especially in the first half, they're really sparked this team and gave it the energy that it was so sorely lacking. And it once again came in crashing the boards, getting these blocks, playing tremendous defense, moving his feet. There was one play where Shai Gilgeous pretty much ISO'd against Kuzma, and he couldn't do anything against Kuzma. He went all the way into the lane, and Kuzma absolutely impeded him and harassed his shot. And I don't think I remember a time where I felt comfortable with Kuzma ISO'd against, you know, a wing like that or a guard like that. And I was like, yeah, you don't need to send any help. But Kuzma had another double-double last night. He has 6 double-doubles on the year, which already surpasses his total amount of doubles the last 2 years.
Oh my God,
it's crazy. He had 17 his rookie year, if you can believe it or not, actually, which is a lot. But with the 6 double-doubles he has this year, he's on pace for that exact number, but in 7 minutes less per game. So,
Wow. Absolutely
nuts. He has 18 blocks on the season, so he just needs 8 more to match the total of blocks he had last year. So, I mean, on all ends, in like 23 minutes a game, Kyle Kuzma is really defending his ass off and doing all the little things. And most of all, I think, doing what Caruso usually does and then just injecting this team with energy. So your quick thoughts again on Kuzma. Garbage man Kuz.
Yeah, garbage man Kuz. I will say I really like his game this year. We talked about this before the season too, but I said, I don't care if he scores 10 points a game. You know, he doesn't need to.
You don't care if he goes 1 for 9 from three.
I don't care if he scores 10 points a game as long as he's hitting an efficient rate from three and playing defense. And he is really up the defense. Like early in the season, it kind of felt like he wasn't there. We kind of forgot what worked for him last year. But when he locks in, he is guarding 1 through 4 at least.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes 5s if they're not like Jokic.
Yeah. But, I mean, well, he had some good plays against Jokic even.
It's
weird.
He did. So like, he's holding his own, and if he continues to play like this, I just continue to think we got such a steal on his extension because mm-hmm. there are not a lot of 6'9 guys who do this kind of stuff. You know, he doesn't get a ton of steals for some reason, which is weird because I feel like he's so active. But as a positional right. defender, he's been so solid. His blocks have been insane. I mean, and it feels like it's all come in this somewhat recent stretch. Like if you take out the first 5-10 games of the season, I wonder if he must be averaging over a block a game in like the last 15
yeah.
or so. So, you know, he's all that's been great. He was shooting 39% from three before last night, which single-handedly dropped him 2 percentage points to 37.
Yeah.
But hopefully, look, basketball is a game of, you know, runs and averages. And if we'll see, is this a regression to his mean, which is like 33%, or is this a small hiccup in what will eventually be, you know, a rise to his mean of 30 or stay at 37 or go up to 38, you know, something like that. If he stays in the mid to high 30s for, you know, a 6'9 forward, I think that's pretty good from three, and everything else he does has been amazing.
And look, at the end of the day, those shots that he took were wide open. So
they were good shots.
What he has to do is just correct that and hit them next time, which he has been doing for yeah. the most part this season. And I feel like for him, as with the defense, his offense has also, everything's been more simplified, and Kuzma's kind yeah. of cut out the fluff. And I think you're just seeing that manifest itself on the court in a lot of different ways, and it's been great to see. All right, so let's talk about Schroeder first. We haven't talked about him a lot. He was struggling for a hot minute there offensively, kind of in his own world, yeah. just trying to find his rhythm, kind of tunnel visioning himself into some bad shots, bad efficiency games, turnovers, not really looking for his teammates. And then in this last stretch, I mean, he's gone 6 of 10, 7 of 9, 7 of 9, 16, 21, 22, 19 points last night, although his efficiency dropped a little, 6 for 16. He's also been dishing the ball out better. And finding, I think, a better groove, getting staggered a little bit more with the bench unit and whatnot. And so what have you seen from Schroeder, and where do you attribute his progress to? I know before his recent stumble, I asked you, what would you extend this? What contract would you give this guy once he's allowed to make more than $17 million a year, which I think is as soon as next week? And you said, I'll give him $20 million. And then for me, I saw what happened like the next 10 games, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd give him $20 million, to be honest with you, because one, he's taking minutes away from THT, and THT is starting to bring the defense. And I don't know why you can't just make it work with THT without having an impediment in Schroeder's case. And I also forgot to mention Schroeder's biggest attribute, which has carried through for the whole season, which has been his pesky defense and just how much fight and grit he's really brought to the table. And that's right. been, I think, the most surprising thing. But now that he's sort of rebounded and regained some footing offensively, which I think you always thought was going to happen anyways, are you back to that place of, yeah, let's just give him $20 million? And I guess this is like a multi-tiered question, but I think you can get to it all. In that same respect, with the rise that you've seen from THT, are you okay knowing what the Lakers may have to match for THT or may have to give him contract-wise, giving Dennis Schroeder $20 million and then also giving THT a similar sort of contract over a span of like 4 years, you know? And how does weighing THT being the future and giving Dennis Schroeder, you know, a contract that may not look that great in years 3 and 4, but knowing that you at least, at the very least, have an asset to flip. Yeah, how are you weighing all those things? But I guess you can start with Dennis Schroeder sort of finding a groove recently.
Yeah, so Schroeder, I think he's an interesting case. Like, he started off the season, preseason, early season, so strong. And he obviously was a runner-up sixth man of the year last year. So you're kind of like, oh, wow, in the right setting, is this guy, like, basically an all-star? And the reality is, I maybe in a good year, but I think more likely he is just one of these, like, very solid players, but very solid players who aren't all-stars may have some down months. I mean, God help us. We remember what KCP did early to start the season last year, right? Like, that guy was like, I mean, people were like, how is this fool even in the league, right? And by the time the season, it's a long season. And by the time the season was over, all of that stuff felt like it felt like eons ago, right? And I think we're kind of seeing something similar with Schroeder. And 5 games that we played in December, he was shooting 51% from the field and 39% from three, scoring 18 points a game, 5 assists, incredibly high efficiency, playing defense still. But then we had a brutal January, dude. I mean, during the time, I feel like I didn't really notice this, but when I went back and looked at the calendar, we played 16 games in January. I mean, that's like a pretty quick and aggressive
start. Pretty much a game every other day, yeah.
Pretty much a game every other day averaged over the course of a month. And that tends to wear guys down, right? Like, in a normal season, sure, you have maybe a few more back-to-backs, but you also have much more of these random 2-3 nights off. And because of this condensed season, I think we're seeing a little bit less of that. But anyway, in that very tough stretch in January, over 16 games, he shot 38% from the field, 26% from three. Here we are back in February, 59% from the field, 40% from three. So it's possible in the grand scheme of the season, and obviously it's early, so I realize I'm making kind of a silly argument, but it's possible January is a big sample size in this small section of the season, but that is just a blip, you know, by the time we get to the end, and maybe more of his months by the end of the season will resemble, you know, December and so far early February, and get him more into where we're expecting. You know, when it comes to taking that and trying to figure out how does that translate to value in a contract, it's so hard to say, because although Schroeder is a guy who we can legitimately rely on, I think, if he figures out his role in this offense and figures out how to work with LeBron and AD, who we can legitimately rely on to be a 16, 17 point per game scorer, as a championship team, having LeBron and AD, it almost makes you take that kind of thing for granted. But those guys don't, like, grow on trees. And certainly for a team that's capped out, it's not going to be easy to duplicate that kind of, you know, output is during the window that LeBron and AD are trying to be the most competitive. I think Schroeder holds a lot of value because of what he can do offensively, but this dude, like, again, I don't think the stats reflect how much he brings to the table defensively. I mean, it's like having a guy who can get you 19 points or, you know, 17 points a game, having a guy who can get you 5 assists, be an extra ball handler, by the way, hit clutch free throws because he's an 84% free throw shooter, you know, or sorry, maybe not 84%, but he's like an 81% free throw shooter. All of those things are so valuable. And when you tack on top of it, the fact that he can just lock dudes up defensively whenever he wants, pressure full court, and never seems to run out of energy. Like, it's not easy. I love Talen Horton-Tucker. He's the future. But it's not easy to replicate this. And I hope that gets taken into consideration. I still would give him the money, frankly. I mean, I don't know how they're viewing their long-term cap game here with the Lakers, but and I'm sure part of this is going to be contingent on, unless they extend him during the season, I'm sure part of this will be contingent on what happens with THT. But, you know, Schroeder has like a very, very clear role. He's only 27. He has plenty more years of prime effectiveness, and we've just seen like the surface of what he can bring to a team. He'll continue to bring more. He hit some clutch jump shots last night, I think was a huge step towards, you know, what he's going to do for us in the playoffs. I feel like his decision making with AD and LeBron has improved quite a bit. You know, early in the season, you would comment quite a few times that his decision making was left a lot to be desired, which was fair. Mm. If you look at the stats, he was averaging 3 turnovers a game in December. That's down to 1.8, despite, you know, the same number of assists. So all of these things are trending in the right direction for me. It just, I'm glad obviously being a Laker general manager sounds like a great dream job on paper, but I'm glad I don't have to make that decision of what to do with THT, excuse me, and Schroeder, but especially and THT Caruso. I mean, look, I think there is room on a championship team for all 4 of these guys, and the 4th one being KCP, who we've also locked into a contract. KCP can defend 1 through 3. Caruso doesn't need many minutes. I think the bulk of the minutes can go to Schroeder and THT, and it would all be fine. The question is, how do you make that work financially with some of the other contracts we have?
And I think you begin running into a situation where you're retaining valuable guys for sure, but all of a sudden your entire bench is making $10 million or more. And then it's very easy that we become the Golden State Warriors. I mean, obviously not to that extent, but I can see where the Lakers find themselves in somewhat of a pinch. And I think because of all those things, I think this is just my prediction. I don't think they're going to come to an extension agreement with Schroeder this year, at least until the season ends, because I think they just want to see maybe what the market looks like for both Caruso and THT and then make their decisions there. Because, I mean, unless they can get Schroeder for $18 million, but I mean, I doubt that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think they want to just see where everything pans out first, because it would be crazy if they just decide, all right, Schroeder, $22 million a year extension, and then, oh my God, let's just pray that Caruso and THT get somewhat reasonable deals and nobody tries to poach them away from us, right? So I don't mind eventually giving him that. I just don't think it'll happen before the season ends. And I agree with you that I think Schroeder, this regular season is his ramp up period for the playoffs, where he should prove his value and worth, kind of the same with Wes Matthews and Markieff Morris. But so far I've been really encouraged by, one, the most consistent thing about him being his defense and his tenacity and activity on that end. And, you know, just being that sort of hustle guy that I think seems to also be the identity of this team, right? That's carried over from last year, just dudes who bring the energy.
And I think he has a lot of room to improve. I mean, Schroeder, like everybody, the question with him coming into the season was, will he keep up his shooting from last year? And he is actually, I mean, he's shooting worse from 3 than he has. I think this is the 2nd worst season of his career. So what we're seeing is not just like, oh, well, maybe last year was a fluke. Okay, even if we accept that last year was a fluke, he is well below his career averages from 3. Otherwise, you know, he's shooting worse than he shot in either season with OKC. He's shooting worse than, you know, some of his later years with the Hawks. There was 1 year where he, you know, shot as poorly as he is right now. And otherwise, this is like an anomaly, if anything, for him. So if that number starts to go up too, you know, he starts looking more efficient all around. I mean, the defense, the efficiency, it's just so hard to replicate. I hope we can keep him. I hope we can keep THT. You know, it's something has to give at some point. But,
right.
I mean, these 2 guys in the backcourt next to LeBron and AD, that's going to keep us dangerous for several years.
Yeah. Great segue. Let's close this episode by talking about Mr. THT. Last night, he had 8 points, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 5 rebounds. He had that ridiculous spin into the lane, into his patented reverse layup. Just so crazy, good. Crazy stuff that he's doing on both ends these last few games. I mean, the biggest game he had was, of course, against Denver, where we held them to like 14 points in each of the last 2 quarters or whatever and really clamped down on defense. And THT was a big part of that. He had 3 steals and 1 block and was really harassing guys like Jamal Murray. But in that game, in only 22 minutes, he had 17 points and 8 of 12 shooting. And by the way, this is his 2nd game scoring 17 points in 22 minutes or less, because he did this against Houston too, where in 20 minutes he shot 7 of 8 from the field and got 17 points. The fact that this dude is doing this, you know, in 22 minutes or less is ridiculous. And now that he's impacting the game on the defensive end, there are still some lapses here or there in terms of off-ball defense and team defense, but the way that he's just able to cause so much havoc, even if it's not his own guy, has been crazy to see, and it just kind of ignites our transition offense because it, like, the defensive plays he makes are not really intuitive or expected. And I guess you can say that about his entire game. You're like, you don't really expect anything to happen the way that he makes things happen. And so especially on defense, it's just immediate. We're able to leak out because of his interceptions, his deflections, and all that stuff. And then on offense, his ability to just break guys off the dribble and then use his body to rub up against people. And that's actually more of his patented move, too, just like getting the body contact, using his body to shield away defenders and then letting his length take it from there is uncanny type stuff. And it's just crazy to watch this guy grow. I think like per 36-wise, he's averaging 2 steals a game. And if you play fantasy basketball, I mean, if Talen Horton-Tucker was getting like 30 minutes, this dude would be averaging like 2 steals a game, 1.5 blocks, and he'd be money on those defensive categories. But, yeah, what have your thoughts been on THT recently? Pretty much the moment Frank Vogel decided to reintegrate him into the rotation after giving him a couple DNPs, it's been off to the races from there.
Yeah, so THT is interesting because, he got off to such a hot shooting start in the preseason, and like you recall those games, he had some games where he just hit tons of threes and scored 30 points. You remember those games?
Yeah.
And then he had some like games early in the season. I think in like the 4 games in December, he was shooting high 30s from three, which was great. And that regressed. And whatever, he's a young player. Frankly, he should barely, I mean, for him to shoot 30% from three this year would be incredible because he was not that great of a shooter even in the G League last year. So that number regressed, but he didn't let that get him down. And this was like kind of a critique I had of Kuzma in prior years. Not this year, Kuzma, but in some past years, I'd look at Kuzma and be like, wow, he is letting the fact that he can't make a three impact every other aspect of his game. Like his defense would go down at times, his playmaking and decision-making would go away. THT just stays locked in. He knows that his shot is not super reliable at this point. So he doesn't overdo it unless he's wide open from three. And it's crazy because he's like very inexperienced. You know exactly what he wants to do is get to the rim, and nobody can seem to stop him. Nobody can stop him. It's just so crazy. He's shooting 46% from the field. And again, the only thing he wants to do is get to the rim as a 6'4 guard. Like, you just don't see this kind of stuff. You were talking about the steal and block numbers. He's averaging six steals. He's averaging 2 steals a game over the last 6 games. He's averaging like about a block a game over that same time ish. A block a game for a 6'4 guard, dude.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, this is just stuff that we haven't really seen before. I've been waiting for like his comeback down to reality moment. I think early in the season, early January, I would comment sometimes to you like, THT, this is like why probably Frank is going to hesitate to play him late in games. Like, he tends to fall asleep away from the ball, and it's going to lead to some issues like this. The frequency of that for a young, 20-year-old player has gone down so significantly. Does he make those mistakes? Sure. Maybe you notice him a little bit more because he's 20, but I mean, it's like the same types of mistakes that frankly, even veterans sometimes make. He has to still continue to ramp that up if he wants to be a rotation player heading into the playoffs and the deep season, but which I think he will be, by the way, at this point. But he has significantly improved in that area. On the ball, significantly improved. I mean, I alluded to this earlier, but when he can test guys, it's like his wingspan is so long that it's like confusing to people. Mm-hmm. It's like you can tell that like sometimes guards are it becomes muscle memory, right? Like these guys are professional athletes. They do this. I mean, they practice shooting thousands of times and sometimes 1,000 times a day taking jump shots or whatever. They get used to the muscle memory of how do I shoot normally? How do I slightly alter my shot if, a point guard's defending me, a taller wing is defending me, a big man's defending, you know, they've got all this down to like muscle memory. And you can tell that like sometimes these guards will take like 3-point shots and THT's arm will just like keep yep. going. And at the very last millisecond, you'll see them kind of twitch their form. And that is causing so many misses. I mean, I'm sure there's some stats nerds out there who could like find the analytics of like how guys, you know, when THT is defending threes, what is the percentage? It has mm-hmm. to be like so much lower than the league average, but it's like watching things like that has been super impressive. He always has energy.
One thing I wanted to add in terms of that, the contesting shots thing is like you mentioned, you know what it feels like to go up against like a shooting guard or a point guard, which is the position he plays. And then these guys right. are sort of realizing, oh my God, it's actually Brandon Ingram on me. You know, the height is deceptive because you can approximate this guy's only 6'5". How much damage can he do? And then all of a sudden you realize, I think he has the same. No, he doesn't have. Maybe Ingram has maybe 1 or 2 inches on him wingspan wise. But that's it. And that's nuts at that position.
And that's nuts. Yeah.
One additional thing I'll add is, and maybe this is, you know, maybe you could view this as a detriment sometimes because he's able to sweep things under the rug. But at his age and at his prime, I don't think it's that much of a problem. But he almost has like a second last line of defense because of his length, where if he gets blown yeah. by, it's almost like the JaVale McGee factor. But imagine JaVale McGee in his prime, right, where he almost wanted you to get by him because that was his tactic. And I'm not saying this is what yeah. THT is doing, but he's trying to learn the game of defense, but he knows that even if you get by him, he'll just put his hand out there and reach, and he's not going to get the foul call because it's such a clean strip because his hands are so huge too, that he does have that maybe second or third last line of defense that you're not expecting because, and Pete mentioned this in his last podcast, where you're already making your gather move because you think you're home free, but you're not because THT is that long. So yep. it's crazy that, you know, this is all instinctual for him right now. But the moment you add that just natural experience and he gains that savviness, I mean, look out. And then one thing I'll add offensively is he's driving to the rim each and every time. But he's currently, because he's young, not getting any free throws or getting to the line.
He's getting no calls, yeah.
But when that comes around, dude, and he's a good free throw shooter, when that comes around, it's going to be – it's over. Thoughts on THT.
No. And to your free throw point, limited attempts. So he's only averaging one a game, but, you know, he's shooting 86%. I mean, you know, maybe that goes down with increased volume, but he's had some games where he's gone 4 for 4 this season, 2 for 2, you know, so he can hit free throws. He's not like his shot is not completely broken. He just needs to work on that three ball. But yeah, on the defensive point you were making, he's learning the angles, and, you know, the same principle I was discussing applies to that too. It's like guards will get by him and they're used to blowing by other guards and knowing what it feels like to finish after that. And they go up for their same layup they always do. And all of a sudden, extendo arm comes out of nowhere and swats the crap out of it. And you know, so it's been really, really fun to watch his growth. The sky is the limit for this guy, because when you play defense like this at this young of an age and you can see the flashes of where his offense could potentially go. I mean, could you imagine? He's doing this on a championship team. Frankly, at 20 years old, like that was the age that, you know, second year Ingram, second year Lonzo. Brandon Ingram is an all-star. Lonzo is, you know, starting to turn things around a little bit. But those guys were number 2 picks, and I don't recall feeling like this when they would come into games. And
yeah.
And by the way, those guys were on teams that were not competitive and they were like the focal point and got to do whatever they wanted yep. with limited consequence. So on a team where THT is held to such a high standard and he continues to go out there and just beat guys, it's been very, very fun to watch.
Yeah. And I think he's much more refined than those guys too, even at this age. And that's why I kind of compare his trajectory more to Andrew Bynum in terms of this freakish guy who's just kind of working off of his own talent, but it's all sort of there. You're just waiting for the experience to catch up so that everything locks into place. And when that happened for Bynum, he was literally like one of the best centers in the league out of nowhere, you know, like out of nowhere. And THT's preseason free throw percentage, by the way, was 89%. He shot 17 of 19 through four games. game. So I definitely think that's real. It's just a matter of waiting for the calls to catch up as well, because I think he's mesmerizing even the refs. So he's just mesmerizing everybody. So with that said, I think we'll end it right there. There's tons of time to talk about THT and his continued growth and how that continues to coincide with Schroeder getting more comfortable, with Frank Vogel continuing to Rubik's Cube these rotations and do this juggling act that he's been doing. By the way, the title of this episode is called The Juggle Book. Anyways, like Jungle Book. But anyways, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. We are still waiting for more 2021 reviews for this new year that we hope is less pandemic-ridden than the last. And yeah, I will catch you later, Tommy.
Later.
Peace.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.